I'll go ahead and make my little, just a two-second spiel. She can start whenever she'd like. So my name's Jill Marie. I'm the center manager here for just about 7 months. New position, new scary position. This is Buddhism in a Nutshell. So who has never been here before? Brand new. You guys have been here before, yeah. Cool. Well, welcome. Do you have any, is your program assistant going to go over anything? Do you know, did you work it out, like where bathrooms are and stuff? Or do you do that yourself?
I've never taught it before, so he didn't.
Or when you do, okay. You got that covered, okay. So I'm, he's got all that covered.
He's got that covered.
So you're in for a real treat. Venerable Kondo may look serious, but she's a lot of fun. Don't tell anybody. See how serious she looks?
I was just playing with this.
It's all... Oh, they saw that?
Yeah.
Okay. She can't pull it off for long. I said she kind of appears serious, but...
I think it's out.
It's out. The word's out in the street. So it's a lot of fun being with her, a lot of fun sharing the Dharma. So if this is this your first time, like, ever even experiencing anything with Buddhism for some of you? Anybody? Yeah? A little bit? So no pressure. It'll be fun. So they're going to go over everything else, and I just wanted to say welcome. And if you ever have any questions, you can email any of us on the website. You can find all the names and everything you need on there. You can look at the calendar all the time, check in what's going on. We have – oh, one thing I do forget to say, there's a sign-up sheet on my desk by the front door, and you can do this online as well. But if you want to receive our email, it comes out once a week, and it's literally what we're up to. You know, we need mowers or things like that. There's a sign-up sheet on the desk. So we need mowers. Yes, I knew that you would come for that. And if you put your name on there, you'll get right into our email list and receive our pretty colorful emails. And then you can unsubscribe if they drive you crazy, so you have choices. Okay, does anybody have anything you want to ask me? All right.
If not, we'll all leave. How's that? If it's not fun, don't do it. So fortunately, I remember to put my phone on mute. So if people would put their phone on mute or vibrate or whatever works for you. Sometimes we can't be away. We need to be able to respond. So if your phone has to ring because you're taking care of someone or you need to respond or you're on call or something like that, don't worry about it. We'll all live. Let's see. There's five handouts that go with this class, and you can find them here. And if you just get, if that doesn't work, because I have been told different things at different times about what works and what doesn't, if that doesn't work, if you go to, under this, spiritual program, and it will say, and one of the titles under there should be Buddhism in a Nutshell, or BIN as I call it, and you should be able to print those out. My name is Nwang Kondo. I am a Buddhist nun in the Tibetan tradition, of the Gelug tradition, in the lineage of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The center is also obviously a Tibetan Buddhist center, and in the Gelug tradition it was part of a much larger organization called the FPMT, which was founded in 1975 by Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Thutpen Yeshe. Again, also in the lineage of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The purpose of the organization is the preservation of the Mahayana tradition, which is to enable people who are interested to learn about this Buddhist tradition, and also to support them if they choose to practice in this tradition in terms of working on their minds. So I saw her ask people if anybody is brand new to Buddhism. Oops, you want to, excuse me, Scott's here to do, since we still have bodies and we're not completely realized beings having transcended our bodies, there are things like water and restrooms. Mm-hmm. And so Scott will give us the information on that, right?
Sure.
That's what I was told you were going to come do.
Sure. Well, I'm actually here to be your microphone minion.
Your microphone minion?
I'm your microphone minion for the evening. So,
oh, wow.
But I'll do the water
and restroom
thing.
I told him he had to get a shirt if he was going to be a minion.
So as far as everybody knows, the restrooms are right out the door and to the left. Pretty straightforward. If you do want to bring water or anything in here, you're welcome to do that. Tea, coffee, whatever you want to bring, that's no problem. The microphone, just so everybody knows, I know some people who are here who haven't been here before, we do stream this. It's not like going out all over the internet or anything, but it is, if you're a member of the center and you want to watch any of the classes, like live streaming, people, there's a way that members can access these. And also we have recordings that are available to members too. So the thing is, if you ask a question or you're saying something and you're not using this microphone, then nobody who's listening can hear you. If like you want to go back and listen to the recording again sometime, you're not going to hear anybody talking if they don't use the microphone. So I know it's a little weird, but we ask everybody to use this and you just keep it up right next to your mouth like that. If it's this far away, then you don't really hear it very well. And that's my whole spiel for now.
Oh, great.
But,
okay. You sure don't want to take longer?
No.
Okay. So I was writing on the blackboard when Jill asked the question about, you know, other than having heard of Buddhism, or else you probably wouldn't have shown up at the door, you have any knowledge of it, or that you've been studying anyone completely new to Buddhism. Okay. Okay, great. Anybody done some reading on their own? Okay. In what kind of reading, may I ask? I'm just curious what you've been reading. If you don't mind, it will help me. I'm very grateful if you're willing to tell me.
So mostly happiness, Dalai Lama's art.
The Art of Happiness?
Art of Happiness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe a few other things, and I kind of get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different kinds of Buddhism, and So I just kind of want some basics, and then what's the best book to read?
Okay. Great. And, if you wait for the microphone, thank you. Thank you, very kind.
So mostly I have a friend. She's a Tibetan. She practices Buddhism.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot from her. And
great.
We visited a few Tibetan monasteries all over the U.S. And it's mostly here and there. And, you know, as the previous lady said, it's mostly I want to get the basic before I can understand the deep concepts.
Okay, so, thank you. Thank you very much. And this gentleman.
I have like mentors, well, that are psychologists.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I've been a spiritual person more. I'd say I was a religious person,
mm-hmm.
but my mind is more scientific.
Mm-hmm.
So, from what I've been reading, this is the right place. So, I am a combat veteran. I suffer from PTS, post-traumatic stress. I don't think it's a disorder. now anymore, and I guess that's why I'm here.
Yeah, your mind got quite a workout.
Yeah, it did.
And still does.
About a week ago, I finally felt like I was back home.
Wonderful.
After a long time.
Wonderful. 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 Yeah. My first job as a clinical social worker was at a 900-bed fully psychiatric VA in the 70s. So, yeah. It's a hard place. Anybody else been doing any reading? Yeah.
I think it's pronounced the Dhammapada.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got that. And totally made no sense to me whatsoever.
Join the club.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It's a big club.
Okay, good.
It's a big club.
Okay.
Yeah. I admire your courage for leaping in there.
Well, you know, it said Buddhist, and I ordered it, and I thought this would be great reading, and I couldn't get much of anything. But I have found some Buddhist monks that have lectures on YouTube.
Great.
And I am fortunate enough to be able to wear my earbuds while I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I'm listening to...
So who are you listening to?
Right now, I really like, what's his name, Ajahn Brahm.
Brahm?
Yes.
I love his voice. You're sitting next to a fan of Ajahn Brahm.
Really?
Yeah, he wrote the book that I gave you.
Oh. Yeah, he talks about a book.
Yeah, actually, we have a copy of one of his books, his most recent books out there called Kindfulness.
Okay, I haven't heard him talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. His first big book was Who Delivered This Load of Dung Anyways? Yes. Couldn't listen to more wonderful. He's wonderful, yeah.
He is good.
Okay, not in our tradition, but still wonderful. Yeah, okay. Okay, so I'm going to... I'll just make... This is... I have not taught in a while. I do a lot of work with kids. I tell lots of stories to kids, and they're completely forgiving. You know, I can just trip over my robes and my tongue, and they just laugh anyway, so I'm in great company. And so it's been about a year since I've been teaching adults, and this is the first time I'm teaching Buddhism in a nutshell, and I'm realizing, I'm going to be perfectly honest, that I wasn't nervous, and now the panic has completely set in. So much for working on my mind. So what I'd like to do is just go around the room and ask for your names so I can forget them. And because over the next 5 weeks on some level, one of the things that the Buddha says is that our best practice happens in community. So over the next 5 weeks, in some ways, if you decide to return, we're going to become a small community and working on our minds together. So it would be good if we at least heard each other's names once. And it would be a great benefit to me if you could just briefly say what you want to get out of this. You know, we've already talked about maybe having some basics, but at the end of the 5 weeks, you know, what's going to tell you that this was a useful use of your time? This is time is valuable, and so I appreciate it. So can we start here
my name is Fanny. It's like, it's F-A-N-I.
F-A-N-I.
Yeah.
Fanny.
And what I'm trying to get out of this class is as I'm becoming more of an adult and getting into more stresses, trying to be able to not let the stress eat me, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, try to keep it low and enjoy life.
Okay.
So if I learn the basics, then it would be easier to listen to lectures and stuff. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. And feel free to pass. That's fine, too.
My name is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. And I came here because I think I've been looking for something, and I don't know what that something is quite yet, but I was curious to see if this might be the place and those ideals and practices.
Great. Thanks. Oh, I love it. I have a mic minion. The tripping mic minion.
My name is CJ, and I am interested in learning more about Buddhism. I took this class once, but I've taken the meditation class a couple of times, but I'm wanting to take it again and make sure I know what I'm doing, because I'm looking at taking the Discovering Buddhism
module
next. So
wow.
I figure I want to make sure I got my foundation pretty well.
Okay.
Down,
so. Thanks. Thanks, CJ.
Hi, my name's Cindy. And while I have a spiritual practice and a church, I think I'm looking for the practical application of some spiritual practices that will have me be really, really true to myself. Just really true.
Yeah. So some tools. Practical.
Some tools, yes.
Right. Great. Yeah.
My name's Angel. This is just part of my journey, I guess, part of the search that I've been going through. I've touched on some things, and I don't know what's really caused it, where I have felt very peaceful and very connected, and something's telling me that I'm probably going to find some answers to some questions I have here.
Great. Welcome.
My name's David.
Hey, David.
I wanted to come to these classes to get like a better foundation and understanding of Buddhism. I'd like to be able to concisely explain to someone else what Buddhism is. And kind of like CJ, I wanted to have the foundation so that I could potentially come to the Discovering Buddhism classes and deepen the practice a little bit more.
Okay. Hey, David.
Hello, I'm Summer. I'm here to learn more about Buddhism, and I feel like it's kind of an overwhelming topic. I've read a lot of spiritual books by Thich Nhat Hanh, and I'm reading Awakening the Buddha Within right now by Lama Surya Das. So just interested in soaking up as much as I can, and this is a good step for me in my journey. So,
great.
Yeah.
Glad you're here.
My name is Lawrence, and like we were talking before, you know, I've just finished giving my mind a pretty big workout, and I've come to learn that by having compassion for others, right? I've learned self-compassion.
Mm.
I've learned that you know, by having like patience and not getting angry and this, it's helping me grow. It's helping me be myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to realize that sometimes other people's faults or whatever, even though they're not faults, they're just it's their ego, you know. They're acting like a child, you know. It's their ego. So by knowing that, I'm able to have more compassion for myself. And then when I did that, I was, you know, I was free. it's weird. It's like I opened the door, you know. And I've always been I've been a religious person, but that's based off of fear. A lot of when I was Catholic, you know. And I'm sorry. I don't want to offend anybody.
No. There are many Tibetan Buddhists that refer to themselves as recovering Catholics.
Okay. But I don't have any complaints about, you know. I just. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. You know, that's not for me to judge or say, but I know that right now my higher power is my unconscious, you know? So I want to delve deeper into that.
Okay.
That's why I'm here.
Great.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Hey, so my name is Tanya, and I'm actually a member here. I've been a member for...
Yeah, I was going to say here.
Yeah, but I'm taking this class because I'm only in the United States like 2 to 3 months a year. So anytime I get to pop in and just be a part of the community physically, like I stream everything.
Uh-huh.
But to actually get to be here is pretty cool.
That's great. Did you get to come to any Venerable Rubina?
Yeah.
I thought I'd seen you here several times. Yeah, great.
I came
into
town and stayed just to see her.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave probably Thursday. So this is pretty cool to get to see you guys.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm Scott. I'm here to learn the basics of Buddhism and develop, or hopefully start to develop, some kind of spiritual practice.
Okay.
Thanks for teaching.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Brandon, and I'm here, I guess, just for some clarification on stuff I've learned over the years and would like to, I guess, expand on.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Tim, and I'm a scientist and a dad, and I guess I feel like I get pulled in 100 different directions sometimes, so I'm just kind of searching for my center.
Okay,
that's pretty
great.
Much it.
What kind of scientist?
I'm an environmental scientist, largely study people's exposure to pollution.
Hi, I'm Aleida.
Say that again for
me. Aleida.
Aleida.
Yes,
thank you.
I am a philosopher, and everything that I read is connected, every author that I read in philosophy is connected always to Buddhism, so that's why I wanted to came, and then my friends and I have been coming to Meditation One, and I have been here on Sundays, and I have like a lot of questions about the postrations and the mantras, and I don't know, so I really want to know what it's all about.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Romina, and I'm here to learn, and I'm very new to the Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
I just did the meditation class with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it, and I'm here to learn more of the basics.
Mm-hmm.
So in the future, maybe I can use some of the concepts with my family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Hi, I am Paola.
Say your name again.
Paola. Like Paola?
Paola. Okay. Okay.
Well, I've ever felt attracted to Buddhism. Mm-hmm. I am a psychologist, and as Yomara, everything that I've read is related to Buddhism. And I would like to get better foundations to learn more basics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Thank
okay.
you.
I'm Ingrid, and I just want to understand and learn more about Buddhism.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Alejandra. I'm just visiting for 2 weeks. But I want to take this chance to have a deeper spiritual connection with myself and the world.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name is Karen, and I'm here because I want to know how Buddhism could help me in my daily life and how to control my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And basically know what Buddhism really is.
Okay, so how many years are we going to meet? If I tried to summarize kind of what I heard. I come up with 3 things. One, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. You know, what's Buddhism? You know. The second thing I heard is More than that, but I mean, just this is like the three baskets. The other thing I heard is people looking to deepen a spiritual path that they're already on, exploring as if this might be a spiritual path they want to follow, and that within that, looking for some really practical things that help with the challenges that each of us face in our day-to-day life. And the third thing I heard was a little bit about Buddhist mind science, understanding a little bit more about what, when Buddhism talks about the mind, what they're talking about. So that's a huge order. We could spend weeks, days, months, years on any one of those. This course is an overview. And so there's going to be a lot of topics we're not going to go into very deeply. Hopefully, given, you know, the curiosity I hear in this room, what I can do from the perspective of the lineage that I follow and that I train in, I can make some suggestions about where one might do further reading. There are several people here that talked about, you know, wanting to get it down before they moved on to discovering Buddhism. Here's the good news. You don't have to get it down before you continue. Here's the bad news. If all of us had it down, we'd be enlightened. So there's an assumption here. I'm going to assume I can't speak. All of you could be sitting here as enlightened beings, and I could be the only person in the room that's not enlightened. But I'm going to infer that there's a possibility that it's more than my mind in here in this room that isn't completely realized, completely enlightened. And so, none of us have it completely. It just means starting. So. I rejoice in your being here. I will not be upset or offended in any way if what happens doesn't fit for you, and that may mean you don't come back, and or it may mean at some point you say, I'm out of here. Please take care of yourself. That's the most important thing. Don't sit here and have a negative state of mind because I'm not meeting what you expected or what you needed, and waste time being negative when you'd be a lot happier going and doing something else. And with that note, I'll tell a story about our resident teacher, Geshe Gelug. There's two pieces of it. One day, he was late getting here, and it was during the North Carolina State Fair. And so he arrived and he apologized for being late because of the traffic. And then he said, I am sorry I am late. There was a great deal of traffic. I had a hard time getting past the Great North Carolina Prayer Festival. And then he proceeded to say, what Buddhism is about is learning to have a more content, more serene, happier mind. And if what I'm offering helps you do that, fine. If what helps you do that is someplace else, please go get it. The first thing that the Buddha, and I'm going to talk about the life of the Buddha, but the first thing the Buddha said is that, one of the first things he said, and it wasn't just he that said it. He came out of a very long tradition. He was a Hindu. And so for 2,000 years before the physical person, Shakyamuni Buddha, was born, there were many wandering spiritual seekers in India who were working very, very hard on their minds. And they had developed some very, very advanced techniques for doing that.
And one of the things that they had discovered and that the Buddha began talking about once he began teaching was that not paying attention and not staying in the moment is one of the things that creates disturbances in our mind stream. One way of putting it is if we're not in the moment, we're usually writing a story about what we're not going to get, what we want, or where it's going to go. And when we're writing that story, we're not very skillful at writing happy endings to that story. Many of us aren't. And so one of the techniques that long predates the Buddha is just attempting to stay with what's going on right now. Well, how do you do that? I can sit here and say, no, 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 no. But that's usually what my mother said to me, no, 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 dear. But what the Buddha suggested and what all the traditions said is that we pay attention to our breath because our breath is always with us. And it does, keeps us alive. And it's part of our, you know, heart center, but it only does two things. It goes in and it goes out. And so if you just pay attention to the breath, and every time your mind starts going somewhere else, you bring it back to that, people have reported that they become calmer. So why don't we, just before I even start, you know, kind of talking on, why don't we take a moment to watch our breath? Now, some people just watch. They pay attention in, out. Some people choose to count on the inhale. And then with each inhale, they count. And when they lose count, they go back to one. And there's a gentleman by the name of Jack Kornfield who's taught meditation for decades and decades and decades that says he has yet to get to 20. So don't beat yourself up if by thought, by breath three, you're already making the grocery list or whatever it is that you may be doing. But let's just take literally 2 minutes. And as I said, in, out. Thich Nhat Hanh, people have talked about Thich Nhat Hanh here. You know, he talks about beauty in, joy out. You know, I tend to count. I need a little more focus than in and out. Not tend to, that's what I do. So let's just take 2 minutes and see if it enables any of us to just kind of to be more present, at least temporarily, and over the course of the next hour. So, and starting now. And when you're ready, come on back. So what is Buddhism about? If you looked at everything in this room, you'd probably be hard-pressed to say this isn't a religion. We have statues, we've got images, we've got, you know, all the trappings that one often associates with church. And yet it isn't. Well, everything you see here is a tool for helping your mind. There are many practices that rely on images, rely on your imagination. And so the image is there so that your mind can learn it and then you can visit it in your imagination. There's a lot of color here. And as I said, this is a Tibetan Buddhist center. And if you went into a Zen, if I was teaching at a Zen center, we'd all be facing a white wall, and maybe there would be a very simple statue of the Buddha. Well, Tibet is a very stark, stark place. It's a high plateau. I've not been there. It's the pictures. It's a gorgeous country. It's a cold, austere environment. And the Tibetans love color. And so when Buddhism came to Tibet and they began building their holy places, they brought the color they loved with it. And the reason I bring that up is what you'll find is that Buddhism, when it spread throughout the world, very much took on the character of the culture it moved into. And so there's one teacher that refers to all of this as Buddhist bling. She's a very highly realized teacher that has tremendous respect. And the reason she says that is when we first come to Buddhism, especially Tibetan Buddhism, you know, we want our mala, and we want our statue, and we want our bell, and we want our incense. And she said, all that's wonderful, dear. She said, but it's about your mind. Mm-hmm. And so that's truly what Buddhism is about. Buddhism is about, in this turning of Buddhism, is the teaching from Shakyamuni Buddha, who, when he saw suffering, said, I've got to figure a way out, and worked very hard to do that. And when he figured out a way out, it turned out it was from working on his mind, and then he chose to stay, hang around and share it. When I use colloquial words, I do not mean it with any disrespect. So Shakyamuni Buddha, who was born Siddhartha Gautama Buddha, was a prince in the Shakya clan in the kingdom of Magda, in the region of Magda in northern India. The Nepalese and the Indians still fight over whether Buddha was born in India or in Nepal, because he was born in Lumbini, which used to be in Nepal, but is now in India. You know the way borders change. So, and there are amazing stories of his birth, that he was, you know, born from his mother's side, that, you know, 20 minutes after he born, he got up and walked 7 steps, you know, and said this and this and this. And you can read biographies like that, and they're really, really quite wonderful. Or you can read biographies by, there's a woman by the name of Karen Armstrong, And I meant to look up some of the kind of miraculous biographies, but all you have to do is Google biographies of Buddha, and most of the ones that come up are the miraculous ones. Karen Armstrong wrote a biography of the Buddha, and she's an expert in religious studies and has written many books and is well respected across Christian, Judaic, and Islamic traditions. And she places the Buddha in, this is 2,500 years ago, almost 2,600 years ago, in a time called the Axial Age. And what they mean by the Axial Age is a time when people, certain cultures that had reached a little bit of leisure. You know, you can't begin thinking about the why of life if what you're worried about is your next meal. And so it happened among the Greeks. It was happening in China. It was happening in Japan. A kind of, what's going on? You know, why are we thinking? And that doesn't take anything away from the Buddha. As I said, he comes out of a tradition of 2,000 years of wandering siddhis, wandering ascetics who were working on their minds. So he was raised as a prince, and when he was very young, a wise man came and said, he's going to be either a great ruler or a great teacher and wise man. Well, Dad, who was the king, wanted the great ruler. I mean, you know, he needed somebody to follow in his footsteps. And so his solution was to keep the boy at home and make sure that he got everything he wanted and things were really nice, you know, good food, good friends, good hunting, good wife, everything. And so that he wouldn't be dissatisfied and go wandering off looking for something else and stuff. Well, as truth would have it, he was out of the palace one day and he was with his charioteer, Chana, and for the first time in his life, he saw someone who was sick. Because his father had done a really, really good job of making sure none of this stuff showed up. And he was married at the time, had a son, and he said, "What's that?" And kind of said, "It's a sick person." Would have said, "What's a sick person?" He said, "Well, you know, it's someone who doesn't feel very good, and their body isn't working, and they're really in, they're in a lot of pain." Buddha said, "What?" So they continue on, and again, this is pretty, some stories tell it that it happened several weeks in a row, some stories tell it happened all in one afternoon. It probably really doesn't matter. And then he saw an old person. Mm-hmm. "Well, what's that? That's an old person." "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, when people get old, they, you know, they have to walk with a cane, they're bent over, they don't see well. You know, I'm a perfect example. I limp, I wear hearing aids, and I wear glasses. So, you know, I am absolute proof that this happens when you get old." And then he saw a dead person. You know, because they were carrying someone to the carnal grounds. And he said, "What's that?" He said, "Dead person? What do you mean a dead person?" He said, "Well, people die. They don't breathe anymore. They die. Their body rots." And, And then he saw a skinny guy with dreads, really great dreads, and the CDs were ahead of their times. And a loincloth, because you can wander around like that in India most of the time, because it's pretty warm. Although, and he said, "What's that?" And he said, "Well, that's a wandering ascetic. That's a wise man, someone who is trying to find out what really makes the world go round, so to speak." And Buddha said, So this troubled him a great deal, and he thought about it, and he thought about it. And so I don't know how much later, he left his wife, left his child, snuck out of the palace, shaved his head. People often ask, you know, people like myself, monks and nuns, you know, why do we shave our heads? And and do you have to do it more than once? You know, do you have to keep it shaved after you ordain? And the simple answer is yes, because 2,500 years ago, to have long hair was a statement of beauty and prosperity for both men and women. And so if you gave up the householder's life, you know, kind of the and became a seeker, you either stopped combing it or doing anything with it, or you shaved your head. And Buddha chose to shave his head. And he went into wandering. And he'd heard there were people that were regarded. And his question was, what causes suffering and how can it stop? Those were the questions. We ask, why am I here? What's going to happen? I usually ask what I'm going to have for dinner. What happens when we die? But his question was, what is suffering and why do people suffer? And there's got to be a way for people to not suffer. There's got to be a way for beings to not suffer. And so those were the questions he left the palace with. And there were some amazing teachers, and he went, and he studied with them. And he was considered, of course it was the Buddha, so of course he was the star student, you know, quickly mastered everything. But when he had mastered it, and this went on for several years, he still didn't give him the answer about why was there suffering? And why did there have to be suffering? Could it stop? And there was a belief at that time that the way you ended suffering was you gave up all attachment to any kind of physical kindness to yourself, whether it be shelter, food, clothes, whatever. And so he became a severe ascetic. And he did that to the point where he was really pretty near death. And somebody offered him some food, and he thought to himself, I don't know if he thought to himself, I don't want to die, so I'm going to eat something. But this being near starvation and this depriving himself of everything was not ending the suffering of his mind. I mean, he didn't seem to mind the suffering, but it wasn't ending the suffering of his mind. So he said, well, this isn't working either. And I still want to seek it. And if I don't do something about this, I'm going to die. So he just started to start eating something. And when he got his health back, by that time, he was in a place called Bodh Gaya, which wasn't called Bodh Gaya at that time, but is now. And he's just decided, and again, this is kind of miraculous, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to think about this until I figure it out. Now, there are some stories that he sat there for 6 years. I don't know. But he did sit. And they say that when he got, that during this time of thinking about what caused suffering and learning and looking at his own mind, he discovered through his own experience and his own examination what caused suffering and what caused suffering, that there is suffering, there are causes for, obviously there is suffering, there are causes for suffering. He discovered the causes for suffering, not the ones, that there is a solution and there is a path that implements the solution. So when he got up, he was what we call, Buddha means fully awakened or enlightened. And what does that mean? Well, two things about this. Did this all happen in 29 years? No. And anybody least bit familiar with Buddhism, even in, let's even begin with Hindu, because Buddha was a Hindu, believes in rebirth. That this historical person called Shakyamuni Buddha had been working on his mind and working on the solution for many, many, many lifetimes. And it was in this lifetime that it all came to fruition. So what did he discover? You know, well, first of all, what does it mean to be fully awakened? What does it mean to be fully awakened? What does it mean to be, well, the definition of someone who is fully awakened and enlightened in Buddhism, okay? I'm only defining stuff from Buddhism, is, and someone is a mind that has completely eliminated all negative states of mind. And which is beyond my comprehension at this point, and cultivated all positive states of mind to the absolute nth degree. And what Buddhism is saying is that, Buddhism says, is that if you eliminate all negative states of mind and you cultivate all positive states of mind, I mean, if that's possible and you get to the ultimate of that, that it's the absolute joining of wisdom and compassion. And that the only thing that can exist when one is infinitely compassionate and infinitely wise is happy, happy, happy. Okay. So the one thing that the Buddha said from day one was don't take, and I think it's one of the things that attracts many people who are seekers, not whether or not they end up claiming to be Buddhist, but encourages people to explore Buddhism, is the Buddha said from day one, don't take anything I say just because I say it. You need to please listen, please examine it, test it, try it out. The analogy that's used, one of the sutras, one of the analogies, it's like gold. You know, if you think something is gold, first you rub it. You know, and if the finish wears off, you know, not this time. You hammer it, and then finally you melt it. You subject it to heat, and that anything that the Buddha said needed to be tested with that kind of stringent intellectual application and also trying it out. And so when he got up and had, again, cultivated eliminated all negative states of mind, and I think what I would suggest to people to think about is why would having no negative states of mind and having all positive states of mind, why would that be congruent or synonymous with happiness? You know, why would it be? And so from my own experience, and I just suggest you look at your own experience, is I can think of very few negative states of mind, whether it be anger, annoyance, impatience, jealousy, greed, covetousness, you know, I mean, I'm not beating myself up, but I can think of very, very few of those states of mind when I was in the middle of that emotion or feeling, if somebody asked me if I was happy, I would have said yes. Now, it may be different for you, you know, I'm not, you know, but that kind of gave me a clue when I first met the Dharma that, there may be something here, you know. And then when I think about being patient, being generous, being kind, doing something that's hard, you know, learning something that's hard, you know, practicing something, at the very minimum, I've experienced some satisfaction. So, you know, I just, as I said, I invite you to look at, can you think of any negative states of mind when you were in the middle of them, would you say you were happy? Anybody who's a psychologist or a therapist here, I would hazard the guess that most of those people do not claim, people don't go to therapists because their negative emotions are floating their boat. That's, as a clinical social worker, that was my experience, you know. So what the Buddha said is, okay, so what causes suffering? And he said, there's suffering, what causes it? You know, and there is suffering. So he said, what causes this? And this gets pretty sophisticated. I mean, I'm just going to kind of glance over this. But he said, so there is suffering. There's a cause for suffering. And he said, there's a difference between suffering and pain. But, so his reasons that, he said the reasons that we have suffering is that we're not very good at seeing how things really exist. What did he mean by that? I'm not sure yet. Ask me in about 5 lifetimes. No, probably. Mm-hmm. And that's if I'm on the fast track. But the kind of there's a teacher here over the weekend, and so I will use her junior school description of that. Was that we have and it's true of all of us, we come, you know, a primordial, and she used the word primordial, attachment to the notion that that there is what she refers to it as a self-existing I. That as soon as this person that's called Kondo, who's sitting here, as soon as I don't get what I want, I get something I don't want, or I'm afraid something will be taken away from me or I want, or they won't get something that I want, that suffering arises. I injured myself, I fell on the ice, which is very, very funny. I come from very northern New York State. You can see Canada from my door. And I fell on the ice in North Carolina. Now that is pretty funny. You know. And I crushed my left shoulder. I mean, and I'm in the emergency room and there's a couple of people with me. And I have to tell you, it really, 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 really hurt. And it was at the end of an ice it was the end of 2 days when people couldn't get to the hospital, so the emergency room is like a zoo. But the point about that was, the point I'm making about that is I really was in a tremendous amount of pain. I was in a tremendous amount of pain. But my terror that I had no idea when someone would see me and make, you know, drugs, please, would make the pain less, made it worse. Made it worse. And I'm really grateful I had a friend with me who just kept saying, breathe, breathe. He was also a squeaky wheel and tried to get me to be seen, so I really appreciated that a lot. But his wife and he were there. And when I could stay in the moment, and so again, that's all I'm saying is that I was so terrified, you know, when I realized that so much of, I don't know if anybody's had a relationship go south. You know, it's not only that you lost the relationship, it's that no one, you'll never have another relationship again as long as you live. Yeah. And maybe I'm, you know, preaching to the choir here, but what the Buddha said is that yes, things happen that are really difficult as long as we're in samsara. Things happen. But it's the story we write about it. Again, not staying in the moment. It's the story we write about it that it's going to go on forever. I lost $1. Now I'm going to lose 10. Now I'm going to lose 100. Now I'm going to... That is the source of our suffering. Does that make sense to anybody here? Does this seem completely outlandish? Now, what was amazing, you know, about what was pretty unbelievable about the Buddha, and I'm not saying believe it, and I'm not sure, I have confidence in it because every little step I've taken has worked, but and the Buddha said all suffering can end. All suffering. Oh, give me a break. You know, what kind of happy juice are you drinking? that is like, you know, as people who are, they were psychologists, you know, if somebody walked in and said to you, I have figured out how all suffering can end and I'm here to tell you how to do it, you know, you would be taking notes and looking where it might fit in the DSM 5 or 6, wherever we're up to, you know. But he said it can end, and there's a way to end it. And so what did he say was the way to end it? And that's where all the different schools of Buddhism come from. Because everybody agrees on the Four Noble Truths. You can go anywhere in the Buddhist world, and they'll say, yes, there's suffering, but there is a cause for suffering, and it's ignorance, attachment and aversion, you know, it's like either, you know, and there is a solution and then there is a path. And everybody kind of, and so there's tweaks on what the path is. Let's see, I wonder what Buddhist teacher is going to thunderbolt me tonight for saying that. No. So what is the path? Well, in the Tibetan tradition, well, first of all, any questions before I go any further? Any questions? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Florence, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
The question I had was, you were talking about suffering, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how to end, like, all the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I have this problem.
Okay.
All right. I've come to learn with therapy and stuff that mm-hmm. a lot of my suffering came from my fears,
mm-hmm.
right? An improper processing of my
mm-hmm.
fears.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, like, basically what I did, it's called prolonged exposure therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, I used to be on a lot of medications. I'm mm-hmm. no longer on the medications no more. And so when I went through this process, I figured out that I can sit in my fear a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
With meditation, because I've been meditating for like 6 months, I learned how to separate the emotional from the physical that I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of started liking the fear. That's where we're talking about my psychology. And it's common among combat veterans to like the fear, because the way I can explain it is that it's called courage. It's when you take that fear and you turn it around. And you focus, you use your wisdom, you use your intelligence, you calm yourself down, and you get done what you have to done in that intense moment of fear, right? So when that happens, then...
So let me interrupt you. So are you saying that the fear can be a trigger for using your intelligence and your courage?
The fear makes me myself. It makes me who I am. It brings out my courage. When I make myself vulnerable to the fear, that brings not just courage out of me, it brings imagination, it brings creativity, it brings wisdom, it brings everything. When I let myself get to that vulnerable point. It's like do you understand? That's how I conquered this. I had to become vulnerable. Even like I couldn't sit in rooms like this with people. I would have to sit
okay.
at the door. So I would have to sit in my fear.
So let me talk. I don't know if this is helpful. I want to respond to this in terms of the Buddhist perspective.
Okay.
What I would say from the Buddhist perspective is that you always had the fear. You know, fear's a healthy thing. You know, I mean, being fearful of cars driving 65 miles an hour on the Beltline and using your mirrors and everything, so being of fear could be a better word, respectful of the power of a 2,000-pound, 3,000-pound vehicle. But what I'm saying is that I don't think that the fear wasn't, it's not like, the fear was always there. It's, and that's, you talked about meditation, so you, in order to do something with the fear, you had to stop writing the story about it. The fear, let me finish, the fear is not going to go away, you know what I mean? In other words, fear, okay, so your intellect kicked in, you weren't paralyzed. You didn't freeze. Your intellect kicked in. And you saw you could do, courage is seeing you could do something about it and being willing to do it.
You know what courage was like in the moment? It was knowing that you had to get a job done. And that people were depending on you.
Uh-huh.
And the people that were depending on you were brothers. you knew that without a doubt, that the guy next to you would give his life for you and that you would give your life for him. So you knew you had this responsibility,
mm-hmm.
that you had to act beyond measure and keep it cool while it was happening in order to get a job done.
Okay.
And that's almost like what I'm doing now, even just being here. like, I couldn't do this. You know, I couldn't be around people. I had a hard time socializing.
Mm-hmm.
So I face my fears now. I see, but in order to do that, I had to...
Yeah, and I guess what I'm saying to you is when you were in the actually dangerous situation, then you recognized it, you stayed in the moment, and you did what you had to do.
Yeah.
When the fear arose back here in the States, you were no longer in that situation.
Yeah.
So you learned to sit with what? The feeling of fear, but the actual triggers were no longer there. No one was shooting at you. No one was going to kill your buddy next to you. The fear was just as real. Right?
Yes, correct.
Right. And you had to learn to sit with it to recognize that those things were no longer happening.
Well, I accept...
Does that make any sense?
It does a little bit. That's kind of what... Maybe I should talk about this later.
Well, no, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that, yes, when you were... One of the reasons, you know, they talk about combat, you know, I'm not talking about the trauma and experience of after, but they talk about combat and almost the... Attachment isn't the right word, is that if you want to stay alive, you stay 100% in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes, correct.
Right.
I think that's instinctual, though. Like, if I was out in the woods, for example, and I was, there's bushes all around, and a gust of wind comes by, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I hear this wind, and what am I going to automatically think? Is it a tiger? Is it a bear? Is it this? And I'm doing that because it could be a tiger or a bear or this. And if it isn't, if it's a gust of wind, I'm okay. But if it is a bear or if it's this, and I think it's a gust of wind, then I just became part of evolution. You know? So I'm going to do this today based on the patterns I see. I'm going to see these patterns. And then based on my judgment, my intellect, I'm going to make a judgment, a fantasy, you might say, of what's happening. Now... If that fantasy, if my mind is not correct, I'm going to make an outlandish fantasy. If I don't use my intellect, if my mind is racing.
But what I want to say to you is there's, I'm sorry, I apologize for saying this, but there's a lot of soldiers that died because they couldn't stay in the moment and the fear froze them.
Okay.
And, I mean, there are tremendous casualties for that. You know, and so, and I, it's like, rejoice that you got to come back and deal with the trauma. Because some people faced with the trauma freeze and don't come back.
Okay.
I mean, it's a great sadness. Yeah. I mean, and I'm just really rejoiced you're here.
Thank you.
And I rejoice in the incredible amount of hard work you had to have done to even be in this room tonight.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for serving.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for serving. Please come back. Please don't let a not very perfect conversation drive you away. But I think he brings up a really good point in terms of I'll do something. I'm on the Beltline and traffic starts to slow down. And it's near that crazy time when it can slow down for a really, really, really long time. Okay. Do I think to myself, oh, I better be alert, we're slowing down, I'm not sure what's going on, I need to pay really close attention to what's going on? Or does my mind go, oh, it's slowing down, I'm going to be late, those people that stop and slow down traffic because they're spectators when there's an accident, you know, why don't they just keep driving? You know, there's all sorts of stories that can cause me discomfort and disturb my mind stream, not going to put me in unsafety, but disturb my mind stream, that have nothing to do with the fact that at this moment, the traffic just slowed down a little bit.
Can anybody think of a scenario in their daily life where that happens multiple times a day? You said you have children, right? I don't know how old they are.
They're 7 and 10. 7 and 10, but they're probably the least of my worries, really.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
I think my job probably is much more tearing my brain apart at this point.
Okay.
I work with a lot of impoverished communities across the country, and I'm trying to design ways to help them. So I see a lot of suffering on a basically daily basis, practically, and it's hard to be exposed to that on a constant, you know, all the time, and still sort of say, I got to keep going, you know.
Mm.
So the kids, yeah, they throw their little chaotic, you know, selves into the mix every once in a while, but
mm-hmm.
that's not
mm-hmm.
really what's kind of dragging my brain in a lot of different places. So,
mm-hmm.
and it's
mm-hmm.
also like, well, what can I do for these people? Am I doing enough? Can I do something to actually help them? And that alone is part of the suffering, because I want to do as much as I can,
mm-hmm.
but I don't always know
mm-hmm.
if it's working or not. So,
mm. okay, well. I'm going to actually introduce kind of a future concept with that I think might, I don't know if it's going to be helpful to you, but one of the things about the Four Noble Truths, which is there is suffering, is that we are completely responsible for all of our suffering in the sense of its choices we've made in this lifetime, according to the Buddhist principles. So, from a Buddhist perspective, someone, first of all, to rejoice every morning that even though you have this really difficult situation, that you are willing to use your skills and the talents to see if there's something that could alleviate the suffering that is affecting so many people. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. And the teacher that was over here over the weekend would also say that doing whatever you need to do to protect your own mind in terms of staying in the fray, even if it takes a very, very long time, you know, as opposed to, they call it, they're referred to as two-day Buddhists. You know, you hit the Dharma, you love it, you know, you meditate 24 hours a day, and then 2 days later, it's like, and you're done, and you leave. You know, so someone like yourself, who's an environmental scientist, who's, you know, willing to keep going back and plugging in, you know, with the hope that there'll be a solution and small changes, as opposed to giving it 1,000% and not being able to continue. And from a Buddhist perspective, that kind of steady, taking care of yourself and yet keeping on is the huge gift. Not easy, you know. But what we'll do as we go on is we're going to talk about karma, and we're going to talk about the level of personal, you know, that there's a kind of level, you know, if the good news is there's an end to suffering. There can be an end to suffering. The hard news is that it's individually each of our jobs.
I have a question. You have been talking about Four Noble Truths.
Uh-huh.
But I still don't get it.
Okay, first note, there is suffering. Would we all agree that there is suffering?
That would be one.
Number one. Number two, there's a cause for suffering. You know, and ignorance, attachment, and aversion, this sense of, you know, always wanting it our way and not being able to stay in the moment and not seeing things as they really are. It's not that difficult things don't happen, but the huge amount of suffering that's attached to them is, you know, what we do in our minds around it. There's like wanting nice things, not wanting bad things, wanting to be well thought of, you know, attachment to reputation, attachment to material goods, attachment to our health and our well-being, all of those things, whenever anything gets in the way of that, there's suffering. And if we could not be so attached to the fact that it's going to change. You know, the minds, all the minds that walked into this room tonight are going to be, different minds are going to walk out of here. There's been a million, you know, mental moments in, so there's suffering, there's a cause of suffering. And the Buddha said there can be an end to suffering. That's the third one. And the fourth one is there's a way to do it.
Okay.
Okay. Sometimes the fact that there is a solution and the solution get lumped into one.
Okay.
He said, there is a solution and here's what it is.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes.
Okay,
thanks.
So.
Thanks.
Sorry, I didn't number them well. Scott?
You were mentioning how so much of our suffering comes from the belief that it's always going to be that way and there's no way to escape it. So, you know, I make a mistake and, I'm just a stupid or whatever.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how those feelings compound and I guess as a part, as it relates to Buddhism?
Okay, so what, and I'm gonna do this briefly, and then we're gonna do the seven, just one more short thing on meditation, and then we'll wrap up. But, okay, so I think that's a great question. What Buddhism, one thing that Buddhism might say, because Buddhism might say 15 things about that, but one thing is that when I make a mistake, my first words out of my mouth often aren't, I made a mistake. They're, oh, I'm stupid. Would you, maybe you're very realized and say, oh, I made a mistake immediately. You don't, you know. So what the Buddha says is that our nature, the core nature, you couldn't become enlightened if your core nature wasn't that of enlightenment. In other words, you can't make a potato an apple. I mean, that's fine. I mean, so far. Well, I don't know. Genetics, I might get there. So I don't. So not being a scientist. But so what the Buddha would say is, as long as you're in samsara, as long as you're in this cycle of existence of, you know, rebirth and rebirth and rebirth, you're going to make mistakes. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But it's not your true nature. Your true nature is this absolute, this conjoining, this infinite wisdom and compassion. And so, when you make mistakes, what Buddhism would say, you go, whoops, yep, there I go again. Yep. But, you know, I have, I'm certainly not thin now, but I used to be very, very, very heavy. I used to weigh well over 200 pounds, and this is like many, many years ago. Well, why did I weigh over 200 pounds? I had a habit of eating way too much, a lot, and very frequently. When I did that, my opinion of myself at that time was, you know, I was just a hopeless pig. And as a matter of fact, I would use that word. You pig, to myself. Okay. Well, being a pig is not what made me fat. What made me fat was I ate too much, and I ate too much frequently. And when I began changing that habit of eating, you know, eating less often and eating less and eating healthier foods, voila, I shrunk, okay? But my point about that is, if I believed They completely believed that I was a pig and that I had absolutely no choice but to keep eating the way I was eating. Well, then there couldn't have been any change. And so what the Buddha is saying is our thoughts, our actions, our feelings are not the core of who we are. And the reason we meditate and the reason we work on our mind, and Lawrence was kind of bringing it up in the sense of he learned to sit with the fear. He learned to examine it. He learned to not freeze with it. He learned to not let it run his life. It's not like it wasn't there. He, in a sense, made friends with it. You know, he had compassion for himself. But, so, that's why we start paying attention to our minds and not let, you know, our thoughts run us. Or that's from a Buddhist perspective. Does that begin to answer that question a little bit? Okay. And we'll be talking a lot more about that. All of these questions were great. People talked about the practical. So we're going to finish with what we call a 7-point meditation posture. And I'm just going to go over it. It's from, again, predates the Buddha. Many of these yogis were doing it. And Scott's going to be my model. He's not only a mic minion, he's a model minion. Please. Okay. So the reason he's doing it, I just want to, the first thing, the whole point of every, there's 7 points to this, and every point of it has to do with what meditates is our mind, but the supporting structure for it is our body. And so everything about the 7 points of the posture is to try and help the body not interfere with the mind. Okay? Now, Scott is capable of the full Vajra position, and which is, it's crisscross applesauce, but it's done in a way that, can you just put, yeah. Great. Thank you. And then we'll stop because I don't want to... Ooh, it's 8:30. I'm sorry. I'll be really fast. I know everybody has to go home. Okay, this is full Vajra position. Obviously, it's very, very stable. I would say to you that not only if someone put me in that position... I would be suffering because I would be writing a story about I can't stand this another second, but I also would be in physical agony. So there's lots of different permutations on this, which is half Vajra or just crisscross applesauce or even... or doing what I'm doing, which is sitting in a chair with my feet flat on the ground, and which is what I'm able to do at this point in my life. And the point of that is that it's very, very stable, and obviously your spine isn't there to say, oh, you want your spine to be completely straight. Well, where's Torque Mata when we need him in the rack? Because it's not going to be completely straight. But what I had a great description of it is you want, it's like pretend your shoulders are a hanger, and like everything is just hanging kind of neatly off the hanger, and your spine is stacked, but not sitting like, but relaxed. I haven't gotten there yet. Your arms are, I love this word, akimbo. Which means there's a little bit of space here, okay? The purpose of that is it lets some airflow in. I mean, it's it's not only stable, but it's comfortable and it lets some air flow in, and so you can keep the posture for a while. Your right hand is in the palm of your left, and you kind of make a little pyramid if you want, and it's couple of fingers below your navel or whatever, you know, feels comfortable for you. But if this is more comfortable, that's fine. It's fine. Your eyes, you kind of look down your nose, you know, pretend like you're looking down your nose at your nose. Show yourself. And your eyes are slightly, you know, they say not completely closed, kind of, you know, eyes at half-mast. A lot of us keep our eyes closed when we first start meditating. Some of us always keep our eyes closed. It's more just to minimize the distractions. If you close your eyes, that's fine, but, you know, I close my eyes and... the tip of your tongue is on the roof of your mouth at the back of your teeth. Now, this is a very practical application. It keeps the drool from running out of your mouth. So, since I don't meditate long enough to have that problem, but if you meditated for hours, it would be an issue. Clench your jaw. It's just kind of, you know, lightly closed. Again, all of this is to... There are energy channels in the body. I mean, anyone that's... This isn't just Buddhist. I mean, you know... Any kind of I think even in many cultures talk about energy channels. This is to kind of make it so the obstacles to energy falling through the body are as minimized as possible, relaxed yet alert. But the most important thing is it a posture you can keep for a few minutes? You know, that's really the most important thing. If it's going to be in 2 minutes, if you're going to be uncomfortable, really find something you think you could keep for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes and that you could keep. And you might have to experiment. There's one author who's brilliant about teaching meditation that talks about the fact that he can't get anybody to relax in his meditation classes until he gets them to lie down. I lie down and it's time for a nap. But he seems to be able to do that. So that's a 7-point posture, and it's what, just experiment with it. See what works with you, see what doesn't, see if you can sit on a cushion. The thing I left off, if you see, is on a cushion, and what it does is it kind of gets your butt kind of a little bit higher than your legs, and it's easier for your spine to settle in without feeling kind of cranked into that position. Well, it's 8:34. The Mike Minion, Mr. Scott, is going to talk briefly about the fact that there is no cost here to taking our classes, but there obviously is a cost to offering them. So
I get to do a commercial.
You get to do an infomercial.
An infomercial. So actually two things, if I may. One thing is, some people were asking about books. There's actually a book that goes... Can I mention the book? Is that okay?
No, I didn't. Okay. And I'll write up... it's called Buddhism in a Nutshell.
The little green book we have out there in the bookstore. So the thing that's cool about this book is it's obviously kind of like the textbook that goes along with this class, but it comes with a CD of Venerable Amy Miller, who is a Buddhist nun, basically teaching this class. And the cool thing about it is... It's 5 2-hour sessions, so they have more time for that than we have for this class. So she goes into a little more detail about some of the subjects that we discussed in this class. It's just a really great companion. If you're interested at all, they have it out there, Buddhism in a Nutshell, and it's a really great companion to this if you're interested in the topics that we talked about here. So my other commercial is, as Venerable Khanda was saying, we don't charge anything for these classes. I don't think we are anymore, but I think at one time we were like the only center in our organization that wasn't charging for classes or didn't normally do that.
We're one of the few in the world.
So And everyone here is a volunteer. You know, most people you see doing stuff around here are volunteers, don't get paid to do this. But we have lights to keep on and things like that. So if you feel like making a donation, we have donation boxes outside, right near the front door and right outside the door here. You can donate on our website also. And so if you find this valuable and you'd like to make a donation, it's always appreciated. Thus ends my commercial.
Oh, infomercial. I will say something about it. If you like the book, Venerable Amy Miller will be here the first week in June for 3 days. And she's an awesome teacher. So, if you don't like anything I'm saying, come back and listen to her.